Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight, we've got special guest Josh.
Hello.
And Matthew.
Hi.
And we're going to talk about Neil Blomkamp's first feature-length motion picture sci-fi extravaganza produced by Peter Jackson, which it said right at the beginning in kind of a... I don't know, I thought that looked kind of weird.
Right after Pegasus.
Yeah, right after the Pegasus thing from the Black Stallion. District 9. So, guys, District 9 has had kind of a marketing campaign about it for a while. Some advertisements. Definitely a lower budget film as a big budget blockbuster type of scenario. No big actors, no real names. It's set in kind of an unfamiliar foreign environment, being set in South Africa and Johannesburg. And it's shot with... for most of it, it's shot with kind of a mockumentary style, I'd say. Right. It says it in the credits, it was shot with the red.
The red, yeah.
So, what would you guys take? What did you think of District 9?
I liked how they were going back and forth pretty seamlessly between the documentary style and more of the narrative style. It was like there was one camera there that all the characters were aware of at some points.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the same scenes, they would use different camera angles that had the same visual look. It wasn't like they were trying to have, like, a really obvious docu-cam and then a narrative cam.
Mm-hmm.
They mixed the two really well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. It was different, and I liked it.
I thought it was different, but I don't know. I mean, I think that they were more heavy in the doc stuff at the beginning, and they had the sort of info dump with the newscasts, and they did have varying types of footage because they were trying to make it look like older stock footage, you know, from the 80s and stuff like that. But then at a certain point, it seemed to me like it tried to transition more into being an actual proper narrative. And to me, the key was when, once they sort of go to give the eviction notices.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it's all like, there's a documentary crew from the company or whatever, Multinational United, MNU, which is the go-to big corporation, documenting them. And that makes sense. And so you think, okay, so this movie's really just going to maybe be kind of like a Cloverfield style. Somebody's documenting a situation, and then kaboom, it goes out of hand, and it turns into a bunch of shaky cam.
But I like that, you know. It gave insight to a lot of things that would have been very confusing had you not broken that documentary wall. I didn't think the transition from documentary to narrative was confusing. It was pretty obvious when they were showing you things that the MNU obviously did not know at the time, but it just gave the audience that advantage of being able to, I don't know, have the full experience. And I thought it was done well. I thought they, at some point, it was getting a little bogged down with the documentary stuff, and it was kind of like, okay, is this gonna, oh, it did end, and then you get to go into a narrative. But not so far that you don't think that it's still really happening, in quotes, you know, really happening. But.
Yeah, I thought it was well executed. I didn't feel like they were trying to hold our hand too much. And it seemed like a really easy way to tell the story, you know, obviously. But, well, it was entertaining, so I didn't have a problem with it.
I think it was an easy way to start the story, to, like, basically go, okay, we got 20 years worth of information to try to give you, and so that's the info dump thing at the beginning, the documentary style at the beginning, all made some sense. And then I'd say it pretty thoroughly switches back over to just being narrative once that first act is sort of done, once the chaos has happened, and then you start following, I'd say, sort of the more main characters, which are some of the aliens, you know, one who is named Christopher
yeah.
And his son and all that, and that... That angle is where, I mean, it starts giving you something to kind of figure out. Because at first you're kind of like, okay, this is novel. This is kind of a funny gimmick. Look, they're trying to make it seem like a real situation where aliens showed up and now this is what's happened and this is the backstory and blah, 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 and info dump from news reports and people talking. But they're also doing something where they're playing with the edit. Because some of those interviews were clearly done after the events of the narrative within the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people talking about things that haven't happened yet, not saying what happens, but it sort of gives it sort of an anticlimactic quality. I'm not a big fan of the, you already know, especially in a movie like this where something could be really, really big, You know, this presumably, you know, you're doing a huge movie. You want whatever happens in it to be kind of an important big thing, but now you start with people talking 20 minutes in about, oh, this thing that happened, and they're all perfectly fine. They're talking about it very matter-of-factly and everything, and so you're like, well, I guess it couldn't have been that huge. It couldn't have been that big. And we see it eventually played out in the second and sort of third acts, where it becomes, I mean, the second act becomes kind of this deconstruction of the evil corporation. It pretty much becomes, it started to lose me there, because it stopped, I was hoping when going into the movie that it was going to be as clever as what the first act kind of is, being this keep it in real realism, but just by the aesthetic documentary look. And then it kind of gets more generic with narrative structure and everything. It's like, oh, well, they got this guy, and there's still a lot of confusing elements. As much information as they give you in that first act, there are a lot of things you still don't know, and it kind of are left nagging, and then give you kind of an incredulous feeling throughout the whole movie, you know? If aliens landed on Earth in 1982 and ended up on top of in Johannesburg, South Africa, if you think about the politics of what's going on in Africa, if you think about the politics that's going on in the world, you're still well into the Cold War. You've got the United Nations. You've got apartheid in South Africa. You've got all of these things going on that are irrelevant, apparently, to this alternate universe. Because really what it comes down to is, in the second act and in the third act, is that there's this multinational united evil corporation that's got the fences around the concentration camp where they're keeping the 1.2 million aliens that they call Prawn.
Which I think was all a metaphor for what was going on.
It was totally... I mean, I thought that was the other thing I was anticipating going into the movie, was that it was going to be this sort of potential political diatribe about immigration
and it was.
Terrorism. It had some of that. Yeah. It definitely did. But it... I don't know. It didn't quite... It felt a little cheesy. It felt a little hack in places where it tries to do that. You know, it's a little too easy to just kind of like... It didn't feel real. It tries to be real with the aesthetic in the first bit, and then in the narrative, so what? Let the narrative play out. It's a straightforward enough narrative. You know, there's a goal to one character. You're kind of confused in that second act about what's going on. How do they know that this is happening to this guy? And they all seem like it's an unremarkable thing, and there's the evil corporation chasing after him, and you kind of roll your eyes like, oh, evil corporation. Those are the go-to bad guys in everything, and they're going to do it again here. Rather than having it be something more complicated with the... I mean, you know, more politically complicated or something more interesting there, they kind of just go, oh, it's an evil corporation. They've pretty much always been evil, and this guy worked for him and kind of knew that, but now that he's a victim of them or of the circumstances, or we're still sort of unclear as to how he's a victim, you know, because things start happening to him that are never really explained as to how they're happening, but
it's that. You know, they did a very good job at keeping you... Well, they did give the audience more information than the protagonist had, but for the most part, what was happening to him, you knew as much as he did.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a problem with not having all the answers, because it's relatable to be in a situation thrown upon you and having all these crazy things happening, and it's very confusing. But it also it makes it more intimate with the audience and the protagonist. You feel like you can view his journey as your own and sympathize for these characters. And I felt if it was just a documentary scenario the entire time, I probably would have cared less about... I can't remember his name. What was the main guy?
Wickers,
something like that.
Yeah, Vic. It wasn't with a V. I thought it was Vickers.
It started with a W.
Yeah, I swear.
It sounded like a V.
The V.
And it started Wickes. With it. What was he? I couldn't tell what his accent.
He was probably South African. I think Blomkamp actually is South African, but maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, I kind of get what you're saying, but I feel like what they do in that first act is there really is no clear protagonist. You follow that character because he's the one with the lav mic, but I never really felt like I cared that much about him, because if you see the way he acts, he's just a paper-pushing salaryman bureaucrat going around telling people, you know, telling these aliens what to do, sort of.
But that's usually like how movies start. You know, you start with the average man,
yeah.
You know, who's just no different from any of us, and then miraculous things happens, and then he has to overcome an obstacle. And I mean, if you follow the rules of storytelling, he is the first character you see, and you realize that, even without realizing it in the very beginning, that he's saying something you should probably pay attention to.
He wasn't the first character, though. They started with the aliens and a bunch of just different random people in the interview setups.
I thought the very first shot was him. Wasn't the very first shot
the mic scratching while
he was in the office talking about something.
But until they really get into the more narrative-style filmmaking, he just feels like any of the other guys.
Right.
Just one guy that might get killed at any moment, and then they transition into somebody else. And I liked how they kind of just... They're looking at all these different people, and then they zero in on one person when exciting things start happening.
Yeah, and then once things really do get rolling, and the intrigue and all, and the stuff in the second act happens, you still are kind of wondering, well, this guy could probably die at any moment, because... I mean, it's easy when you have no big names in your movie, because either if it's a small-budget movie, something like The Hurt Locker, if you see a big name, chances are they didn't pay them to be in it for very long.
Or
if it's a certain budget movie, you know, you got your one big name, and that character's not going to die off a third of the way in.
Yeah, if...
So you didn't know. All bets were off with all these characters.
Sure.
But I'll be perfectly honest. To me, when it really felt like it turned into a narrative was when you got inside of Christopher's house with his son and everything, because that to me was the first time I was like, okay, there's no doubt about that this is not DocuCam, you know, there's no contrivance, there's no pretense by which this could be captured footage from the documentary that's following the guys around as they're doing the eviction notices. And that to me was the first time. So in a weird way, Christopher to me was the character I identified with the most, the alien. Because he had, like, the most straightforward goal. I mean, if you think about it, what's going on with Wickus or whatever is shit happens to him. He's sort of a bumbling, paper-pushing bureaucrat. Shit happens to him. He runs around scared. He becomes kind of elevated, you know, to kind of a... And it sort of surprises you in a way that seemed a little off, you know, that he, you know, is able to, like, go up to these Nigerian terrorists and kind of hold his own to a degree, though a lot of it is luck. And all that, but I mean, I think I identified more with the alien in that, and in that sense, it was kind of good because the aliens were the oppressed group and all of that. But then you start asking more questions about, well, what's going on with the language barrier thing, where it seems like they understand each other perfectly fine.
Well, you figure 28 years of exposure.
You do, but I would have loved an info dump that was just like a sociologist or a linguist or someone basically saying, eventually we were able to communicate, because this is the key thing. If they had communication with an alien race that presumably, as much as they seem like idiot workers or whatever they're supposed to be, they've got FTL, they've got faster than light, they've got technologies that are far superior to our own.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to want to actually talk with these people if you can. And the fact that they can communicate with them, but then instead end up relegating them into these camps and treating them like,
well, because it was
like third class.
It was the big evil.
It seemed unbelievable. Yeah. It was.
You know, they didn't want to communicate how they could have this technology. They just wanted to have that technology.
They wanted the weapons and
I'm not going to give us any spoilers, but they had that obstacle with the technology that they couldn't overcome. And they were going to figure out how to do it on their own means, and, you know.
And then they did somehow. And that seems that angle, what happens, the big thing that happens to Wickus or whatever, is still inexplicable to me. I don't think we discussed it. None of us are certain as to how what happens to him at the end of the first act or in the second act actually happened. We couldn't find the vectoring agent. And then the fact that the corporation pretty much just goes with it, like almost like they'd planned on this happening, seems a little... I mean, they're just problems. You can nitpick problems with the plot. There are a few plot holes. There are a few issues here and there. To me, the biggest one is you start with this attempt at doing realism with the documentary style, and then you kind of give it up, and then it becomes more and more kind of a generic, straightforward narrative of, like, we got the good guy, alien, buddy cop. It's the alien and the dude buddy copping up to fight the evil corporation, so that then, you know, it's E.T. almost. It's like phone home at the end. We got to get you home.
Which I thought was interesting because in this, like you said, the Christopher character is more relatable than the human, because in a lot more ways, in a lot of ways, he had more humanity than the human.
He had the son.
Yeah, he had the son. He actually cared for his people. He cared for the humans, even when he had no reason to.
He did. And that stuff to me was problematic, because there was interactions with the way the Wickus and Christopher interacted, and there were things that Christopher did or Wickes did to Christopher that to me seemed like, I don't get why Christopher's so forgiving sort of still.
But they hint towards that, like there was, you know, they're just a trusting race, and you know, it's just another social commentary of the evils of humanity. And
I guess, all just but that to me seemed uninteresting and kind of played out and tired. And it's just the whole idea of, well, where is the rest of the world while this is happening? Where are the other big nations? Why is this multinational united corporation? What's the genesis of them that gives them such grand authority over the biggest event, the biggest sort of revelation or thing in humanity?
I think they kind of set that up a little bit at the beginning, where they kind of established that there was this tension, this huge tension between everybody, and taking place 28 years after this contact, it kind of seems like a more involved other corporations and governments being involved in this situation wasn't the story they wanted to tell. And it seems like enough time had passed where everything is kind of settled enough for a smaller story, a more...
Possibly, but, I mean, even so I know 20 years is a long time and people get bored with things and they lose attention, but I don't know. I think that if it had been a different entity or maybe an interplay between two different entities, it would have made more sense. And then just the fact that that humans can communicate with these creatures, these aliens, and then they never have a meaningful bit of communication at all until the end, where it's like, well, here, I can do this, and then I can go home. But meanwhile, in the last 20 years, we've been oppressed, even though we can talk to each other. And that there's no, like, human rights groups. There's no ACLU championing these people. There's nothing there. It's basically like the whole world just said, okay, we'll give this hugest thing ever to a big evil multinational corporation.
Well,
and
then
they end up being big and evil. Like, you know,
it was a big evil corporation, but on the face, the global front of it all, you have the workers, like they would interview the doctors and they'd be like, we just really want to help the aliens, we want to help him, blah blah blah. And then that whole reveal at the end when they have the text and they explain what the corporation was doing was obviously like a big secret that no one else knew what was going on. So on the front, they were trying to help. I guess they were the ambassadors of the planet trying to get this information from this new alien race. It was just the head of the corporation that, you know.
Well, yeah, you understand the tech angle and all of that.
Again, there was that crutch with the tech, so I can understand why other nations would just give up after 28, 30 years, you know.
Well, possibly, but DNA is DNA. I mean, there would be real science going on and real...
Cultural revolution. There was science going on because I remember...
But it was all in the auspices of cloak and dagger evil corporation stuff.
It was.
And there would be more than that. I mean, I could agree that there would be the clandestine, whatever, dark, shady shit going on. But there would also be other stuff. I guess I'm projecting what I thought this movie could be if it were elevated to a higher level. And that would probably have made it less of an action story. It just would have. I mean, that's pretty much what it turns into. Act 2 is sort of a chase. Act 3 is basically just action piece. Action piece, action piece.
Which is to be expected of any summer blockbuster.
Well, you know,
it totally delivered.
And yeah, it had some great stuff.
All those weapons and
the
robot. Awesome.
Some great stuff, some great ultra-violence. It didn't pay off into some huge thing, but because of these interviews from the first act, you knew it probably wasn't going to anyway. You know, you knew there wasn't going to be something hugely spectacular happening at the end, some grand revelation or anything.
Right.
Which, I don't know. I mean, like I said, there were problems with the execution, some plot holes, issues with what kind of movie it was trying to do. It was a bit of a mess there. I think that the things it wanted to do, it seemed like it did do, and the story it wanted to tell, like you said, Matt, it wanted to be the story that it was. I don't think that it was trying to do anything that it didn't do and failing at that. I just feel like it... With what it did do in that second and that third act, it was kind of generic to me. It was kind of like stuff I'd sort of seen before. Like I said, it was like a R-rated E.T. or something meets some kind of... It's like David Cronenberg does E.T. or something, you know?
It was very dark. I mean, for the most part, the documentary that you're talking about wanting to see, I felt would have came out two decades ago. And this whole documentary, like you said, was set up to focus on this one guy because they kept talking about it in past tense.
Yeah.
They kept saying, well, he did this, he did that. And then, you know, setting up, well, this documentary is probably about this guy's story. And that's how the movie played out. And I thought for the story they were trying to tell, they did a very good job.
Yeah, I think you know, they did all right. I think the story that they ended up telling was not as good as it could have been. It relied on certain sorts of things that are kind of tired and played out, you know, the father and the son, and, you know, oh, I won't leave you, I'll be back, I promise. And they in a weird way, I don't know, did you feel like they set it up for a sequel?
I feel they left it very open-ended. I feel it can end exactly where it is.
They could go anywhere with it.
They could go with the sequel. I don't think they need to. But, I mean, I hear, just like you said, this is kind of like a Cloverfield thing, and they're doing the sequel for that already. They don't need to, right? But they can, and just because everything is meant to be franchised in today's movie world,
Well, people are telling bigger stories, and that's fine. I mean, you know, that's fine. They've got the technology now to do these big sci-fi epics, and so I got no problem with that. I think that if they were doing another one, I'd, just like with Cloverfield, it'd be hard to come up with another excuse to do part of it as a documentary. But
well, I feel you'd be less satisfied. I feel there'd even be more action in the sequel, and it'd be more.
That would
like
be fine with me. It would be
more
of a story then, and I would be interested in what that other angle on the story could be. I'd be interested to see if they would blow it up bigger than just South Africa in terms of the other nations of the world, the other peoples of the world being involved in this. In a weird way, it felt like this whole story was happening in a bubble that was just in South Africa, like the rest of the world didn't care, didn't exist. And it's believable to a degree that after 20 years of just something hovering over a city and a handful of people, that everyone kind of gives up and says, we don't give a shit.
It was more like 30 years at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So. It was actually a little in the future. It was 2010 on all the security cam footage and stuff. But, I don't know, I just...
I feel the movie
I feel disappointed in what this movie ultimately was to a degree, but not to an extreme degree. I think you got to give it credit for trying new things, even though it was kind of a mess, in my opinion, blending the documentary with the narrative. It still works well enough. You do get kind of a well-constructed story, and it does have good action. It did hold me, and it was short. It was under 2 hours. So it moved along at a good pace.
Seeing Peter Jackson's name on it made me think it was going to be a butt buster. But I was not sore.
Well, it's very likely there's always this giant cop-out nowadays that with the director's cut, there's 10 more minutes of explanation and here and there and character interaction that totally gives me some of those things that I feel I'm missing, you know?
But I just watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind on Blu-ray, and the director's cut actually has 7 minutes of additional footage, but is 3 minutes shorter than the theatrical cut.
Wow.
Because they remove some stuff.
Oh, well, interesting. Yeah. That's a good call.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I long story short, if I have to put a number to it, I think I'd give District 9 a 3.5 out of 5 stars.
I would give it a 7 out of 10.
That's the same as mine. So Matt's
my numbers are bigger.
Matt's a 3.5. I'm a 3.5.
If we put it on the 10 scale, I don't know if you do points, but I want to give it an 8.5. I feel it's right between that 80% and 90% mark.
I want to give mine a 1.75 out of 2.5.
I think that's fair.
So I think it sounds like we're all in a slight agreement. I probably liked it slightly less than you guys.
Well,
but...
okay, let's talk about the aliens themselves, though, because I was reading an article today about awesome and lame aliens, and it went on to talk about the Predators, and it was comparing everything to District 9, and it was talking about like the shitty aliens and what was Battlefield
Earth. Yeah, that was ridiculous.
How did you feel about the alien species?
I felt that they were, like you said, ostensibly the aliens were in a... For part of it, which is the meandery part I had problems with, this metaphor for a lower class. They were bipedal, which made sense, but then they had a second set of arms that they could kind of bring in and out of their thorax.
And they did nothing with it.
And
it was
never,
cool.
I
thought they were pretty generic, just big exoskeletal bug creature.
Yeah, they looked
like
kind of
so
like something from Starship Troopers or something, but you did occasionally get closes of like Christopher, and you could see his eyes. You got the interaction with the little kid. So, I mean, they're easy to humanize because of the way they were, and then they had weapons, and then they wore clothes, sort of, too.
Yeah, they had one with the bra.
Yeah, exactly.
It looked like they didn't have any clothes of their own, though. When they showed them on the ship at the beginning, they weren't wearing anything.
So, I mean, I think that for what this movie's trying to do, those kind of aliens, you wouldn't do some kind of a goo monster or something. I mean, it wouldn't have worked right, I don't think.
I just couldn't really gauge how strong they actually were. Because I remember in the beginning, the docu-stuff, they had, like, one or two guys subduing them, and it would be nothing. And then in other scenes, they would have them, like, just mowing through humans, back-slapping them, like, across a football field. And
yeah,
I'm sure, well, not all of them have the same strength. I guess, you know, their maximum strength is to be able to backhand a human across.
I guess.
From the design, they look like they're, I don't know what the term is. I think it's carnosaurial. Like a cheetah or a leopard, you know, they're thin and long limbed, but they've got a lot of elastic power in that, which is to say that, like, if they snap, you know, if you snap an arm to hit something, then you could probably put a good bit of power into that.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be able to lift a car because you don't have a lot of, like, bulk strength, which they didn't have. You know, like I said, they were aliens. They had long limbs. They could probably run pretty fast, and they could probably snap somebody pretty quick. They're a little sharp looking.
Were there different species too? Because I remember that one scene they had like these.
They
little
were fighting with those things.
Creatures.
I could never tell if those were supposed to be like some kind of pupa stage baby
alien
or what.
Cockroaches.
Yeah,
alien cocks, cockfights.
Actually, yeah. when I did see that, it started. It was one of those almost eye roll moments for me where it's like, okay, so there are other alien crazy things, and they're just fine running around out here on Earth. There's too many things in this movie.
Yeah.
It wants to be so real and serious at the beginning, but then it just starts throwing things like alien cockroaches or whatever, and you're just like, well, what's that all about? How many different species are there? How infected is the Earth now with alien species and with disease and whatever else?
That.
They talk about prostitution, for crying out loud. Interspecies.
Prostitution, yeah.
Like,
I wish they had gone into that
sex.
A little more.
I don't know, man.
You're right. They do handle this film as if you already knew that aliens lived on Earth. And you already have the information, so you don't need it. So let's just tell you a smaller story.
Yeah, and, you know, so, I can appreciate some of that throw you in there and let you figure it out as it goes. And you do figure some of that stuff out. But then when you do figure some of it out, like, you eventually realize, okay, this guy's... It's not sort of a half-assed communication. This guy pretty much understands what the alien's saying to him, and the alien pretty much understands what he's saying to him. They're communicating just fine in a tense situation and everything else. So the humans and the aliens can talk. They could talk just fine. They could have all kinds of conversation. They could sit down at a table and say, this is our concern with your situation. What can we do to help you? What can you do to help us?
I think that can be said in any concentration camp, because humans can talk among humans, and they don't sit down and talk about these type of
scenarios.
Well,
yeah, but they'll
put them in a, you know...
The story there is that it's one of hostility and war. I mean, there's really nothing to... I mean, there's something to motivate... I mean, it's comparable to, I guess, you know, like the beginning of Scarface or something, you know, where you have a bunch of refugees that show up and you don't have any place to put them, you don't have anything to do with them, any facilities. So that part makes sense as to why they'd be cordoned off. You're also kind of scared of them because they are the other. They are from somewhere else. But then at a certain point, they've got superior stuff. They've got technologies and things which would make you think, okay, well, we need to talk to these things. We need to understand them because who knows? They could be leading an army to come kill us, or they could have great things that could help us with our society and everything else. I mean, you know, rather
but they did. They did at some point, didn't they? Say that I guess with the exception of Christopher, every other alien was a worker drone. They don't really think for themselves.
That was the inference that they made. They were, you know, they were kind of like recreation to them was lighting shit on fire. They sounded like they were just idiots, which you kind of got to a degree. But at the same time, it's like, well,
it's game over, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bug hunt. And so they go on a bug hunt, and there you go. So, I don't know. That's the take. It's there's some good action stuff at the end, but I don't know if there was anything in it that really, like, blew me away from a, like, giant screen visual standpoint.
I think they did a fantastic job with the consistency visually. They set it up like a documentary, and they keep that kind of really realistic feel throughout. I mean, there weren't any amazing dolly shots or crane shots or anything.
Yeah.
They kept everything like handheld.
Yeah.
Even the narrative style.
They did, but that also made it messier in terms of distinguishing, at least early on. At a certain point, you're pretty much like, okay, this is all narrative now. There's no more documentary, no more auspices of the documentary
right.
Going on. But for a while there, you're like, what kind of movie is this now? Okay, now it's turning into a story about a father-son alien trying to do something, and what's going on?
You know, I can't recall of any other example.
Yeah, like I said, that's why I gave it as high a credit, because if it didn't have some different things in it, then it would just be, you know, kind of a crazy sci-fi channel type movie with blowing stuff up and shit happens, and instead it's got a few other little angles to it that make it, that elevate it above that, put it at a 3.5, I give it a 70%, you know, whatever you want to call it. So that's that. So
the CG was really good.
Yeah, the CG was good. I like that lived in CG, you know,
yeah.
Like where it feels like part of the actual world, and
yeah.
It's not like pristine and elevated.
Yeah, and it's not like they've set up some shot specifically for a composite. It's like
yeah.
Everything is just enmeshed in this handheld.
They
style,
started doing
yeah.
stuff like that in like Firefly, where they first tried to do the lived in world sci-fi,
mm-hmm.
and I like that a lot more, where it's like, oh, you got a handheld camera and you kind of see this million-dollar composite shot in the corner, but we're not going to focus on it because
mm-hmm.
we spent $1 million
mm-hmm.
on it.
Mm-hmm.
We want it to feel like it's actually real.
How much freedom do we have in this podcast? Because I want to. There was one loophole that Matt and I were talking about.
You mean in terms of giving stuff away about the plot?
Right. I mean,
we could just lay down spoiler alert now. I'm going to post this really early, so
okay.
I mean, okay. So you've made it half an hour into the podcast. We've given our review, and now we'll do. This is going to be some spoiler material for those that really want to get in.
Spoiler.
People that really want to get into the actual nuts and bolts of the plot contrivances or things that happen within the film. So, be forewarned, spoilers follow.
Okay.
Wait. Okay, spoilers.
Okay, so...
What was this?
Now, the aliens, the Christopher guy, he's trying to get fuel for his ship to go home.
Mm-hmm. And it took him 20 years to just rummage around and find out.
Took him
20
years to rummage through their own shit. They made it very clear that there was nothing we had that they had of use.
Yeah.
Right? And they needed our technology.
So how much crap fell off their ship that they had to root
through
for
20 not even go
years.
That far. Let's not even go that far. They need to use their technology to extract fuel from whatever to get out of there. Apparently, they were on their mothership for 3 months before we breached. Why couldn't they have extracted that while they had it all localized in
yeah.
one spot?
The whole... And that's really the crux of the whole problem. It's like, well, they got there. Something must have been busted. They all ended up starving because they were idiot workers, I guess. But one of them was able to be smart enough to eventually figure
yeah.
out what to do to get the ship running again. But like you said, it looks like it took him. Did it take him 20 years to accumulate enough of that fluid? Or did he just all of a sudden that day happen to find exactly what he needed right on the top of the pile? And then, boom, now we're good to go. We have what we need because they had the fuel that they needed already, but then the ship crashed, and then there was no major repairs on the ship. There's not like for 20 years there was repairs going on the ship. For 20 years the aliens were lighting shit on fire and fucking around with the Nigerians and stuff. So yeah, that was a big problem. And we still are, I mean, you know, since we're in free spoiler territory, the main thing with the infection that caused the whole Cronenberg scenario where he starts turning into one of them was, I was never clear on.
It was fairly far-fetched.
If it was the gasoline, if it was the space fuel that he got in his face, that seems believable, but it also seems like, well, wait, the space fuel will power their ships and turn other species into them.
I thought that was really weird.
It's like
I
baking
thought it
soda
was...
and vinegar. It does
yeah, but why
no
would it have started in the injury? I almost feel like the injury was what caused the infection.
Right.
You know, and that caused
I thought it was a little weird, because honestly, when I first saw that, when he turned into an alien, I honestly assumed that their plan to get this fuel was to ingest it themselves because it would turn them human. I thought that's what they were trying to do. Pass as human.
That, I had that thought too.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was like, I thought that's where they were going to go.
Like crap here. Why
let's
become
human and we'll
enemy.
Just walk right out of District 9. I thought that's, but then it just turned out to be gas.
Yeah.
And
but I talked about. Well, I didn't talk about, but I thought. Well, here's the other angle. I mean, you're looking for a twist. You're looking for something. And you're like, well, maybe this Christopher guy's not such a good guy. Maybe he's, maybe there's nefarious stuff going on here. Maybe this stuff can be used to turn humans into aliens. And it's like, well, once you infect a human population, once you make them just like us, then you have to start treating us. You know, you have to give us full rights and full reign. And, you know, we're all of a sudden, you know, wanting to be able to marry and wanting to be able to, you know, wanting to be able to run for Senate and everything else.
Porn. I thought that scene where he has that birthday party where he's shaking everybody's hand
yeah.
and he's super sick and he just has to get out of there and go to the bathroom to take a crap. I thought they were foreshadowing something.
They definitely
something
were
contagious.
Well, you knew as soon as that stuff got on his, blew up in his face, it's something. You're like, okay, so he's either going to turn into one of these creatures. It's going to be gross and crazy. But who knows?
I thought it was contagious, too, because in the beginning they kept saying, oh, he was a traitor, and why he would ever do that, it was beyond my comprehension. So I thought that, like, he infected, you know, the populace, and they had to, like, kill a bunch of people.
But there was nothing that big, see? Because you almost knew there couldn't have been anything that big, because the people are talking about everything so matter-of-factly. They're like, well, you know, whatever he did do was... And you're like, okay, I guess it was the sort of thing that was about a 3 on your level of excitement. Interviewee, you know?
In all honesty, after that incident at the end, the whole climactic military alien fight scene where there was like a 3-way war going on, and when they had footage of that one main military guy getting ripped apart,
yeah.
I just assumed the next scene was going to be, and then we had to drop bombs on District 9 and eliminate the threat. They did nothing. It was like, well, they killed our humans, but we sat here.
Because they didn't have any real power, any real military power, because they were a multinational corporation. They had a handful of choppers and a bunch of mercs.
I guess.
And they went in with machine guns and did what they did. But there was no, I mean, you know, there was no call in the president, let's B-2 bomb this thing, which could have elevated it to a higher level. You're right. That would have really created a major literal and figurative ticking time bomb of, well, the whole thing can get wiped out.
Yeah.
Instead, it kind of does a false ending where you think it's going to be depressing because you think they're not going to make it and it might end like that, but then it turns into a giant action sequence. And the mecha was cool. Don't get me wrong.
I'd love to see some of that.
And
it was, it lasted just long enough. It wasn't too short. It wasn't like, oh, I need to get out of this one situation by getting into this mech and blasting my way out and then it dies.
Nope.
No, they kept it going. And yeah. I really appreciated
that. I love the weapons
that
on the mech. I just think, honestly, after 28 years, I don't care who you are, that the military would get involved and you'd have some sort of a contingency plan in case of these creatures went awry to neutralize the threat. And
you would have
there was
all
just
kinds
nothing.
You would have all kinds of things. Now, I mean, maybe by setting it in, like, South Africa, they they made it more insulary in terms of, like, well, what would be acceptable and what wouldn't, because there's all kinds of other shit going on there, you know? You know, there's the Nigerian gangs, and there's all kinds of other stuff that really just kind of make it kind of a lawless region to that on some level. But, you know, there we go. So, I mean, there really wasn't a hell of a lot of spoiler in that spoiler. So
you know what I thought was going to happen right when the Nigerian gang boss was about to chop off his arm?
Yeah.
To get that arm, he used the little fuel canister. So what I thought he was going to do, because he wanted the fuel canister too, was to tell this guy the truth. You don't need my arm.
Yeah.
Eating it isn't my... Well, you didn't know that, but what he should have told the guy was, the fuel canister is back in that ship, which is like being surrounded by all these mercs right now.
You mean the
That's
first time or the second
go.
Time that he met him? I thought he was going to say it the second time, like when they had him all on the table.
Yeah.
Right, like, right when they're about to chop off his arm.
Yeah.
If he had told them that, it would have saved his arm, and it might have given him an opportunity to get the fuel canister again.
I think it would have saved his arm, but it wouldn't have saved a bullet in his head.
Yeah, that's true. And those circumstances are what they are. You know?
If he had done that, they might have pulled out some Deus Ex to save
Well, they
the
did
day.
Pull out the Deus Ex, and that was the little kid
right.
was... the little. I do enjoy that. A handful of cliches.
They could have drawn that moment out a little bit longer before the Deus Ex.
Well,
it was still satisfying.
It was because it was cool.
Moment.
I mean, you know, and you got the precocious tech kid. You know, is sitting there and he's running the Minority Report stuff, flipping the imaginary switches, and he remote activates the mecha suit, and there you go, you get a Deus Machina, and it comes in the machine gun. Because
they didn't really explain like where these suits came from or how many there were. So when that happened, I thought they were going to be like a bunch of sleeper suits waking up and like just killing all the people.
It'd be like M209.
That's what the trailer would have you think.
Yeah, to a degree. That was the other issue, was just all this weaponry that the aliens could use at any time they wanted, but sort of never did. Instead, they were content to just give it over
selling
to
him for tax.
He took out a significant amount of the military or the mercenaries with that suit. One of them, who knew what they were doing, could have easily, I don't know, liberated their people.
If that would have been what they wanted, it was almost like maybe they didn't want that.
They just wanted cat food.
They just wanted cat. And they didn't mention something about catnip, so maybe it really was like a drug thing, you know? Maybe it was like that was...
That was the idea behind it, yeah. They were addicted to cat food.
They were addicted to cat food. Well, there you go. Biggest spoiler of all.
They were addicted to cat food.
So, if you want to check us out, Feudal Podcast, www.graniteseed.com/futilepodcast or futilepodcast@gmail.com to send us any emails. And that was that. That was District 9. Take it easy, guys.